This episode of H10 is brought to you by Nihongo, a Japanese dictionary, flashcard app, and reading assistant for iPhone and iPad. Developed in Nishinomiya by a Hanshin Tigers fan, Nihongo includes a Safari extension that transforms Japanese web pages to be easy to read. Just tap a word to reveal its translation without leaving the page. Perfect for checking up on baseball news. Check it out at nihongo-app.com or search the App Store for Nihongo. Also, a reminder to buy Sayaka Yamamoto's solo album, Rainbow, available on iTunes today. Actually, it was released in 2016, but it is awesome. She is also a Tigers super fan. If she isn't tweeting about NMB48, she tweets about the Tigers. She worked with a team to film a music video last year of her singing the fight song. Check that out as well. Also, brought to you by Rock Core Japan. Rock Core, which rewards your 4 hours of volunteer work with a free concert. As a matter of fact, the Rock Core concert is taking place today, September the 1st, in Japan. Check them out at www.rockcore.com. yahoo.co.jp. This is H10, Hanshin Tigers English News, where Hanshin Tigers fans all around the world gather together for the sequel of Jake and T-Ray hanging out in a karaoke box.
Here we are. It's noisy as usual. We apologize for the background noise, but we've actually got a reason for doing it, the podcast on the fly today, which we'll get into a little bit later. But we're back, finally. We've been gone for a long time, and it's good to be back.
It was a long, hard summer for you Hanshin Tigers fans. Not so much for us, though. By the way, sorry. This is August the 31st, 2018, episode 85. Welcome to the show. I'm T-Ray.
This
is
Jake.
Yes, and I myself, T-Ray, was away on vacation from July 30th until August 22nd. Nice time spent in Canada with the family, away from the intense Kansai heat. I also missed the whole high school baseball tournament, and I missed quite a bit of Hanshin Tigers action, which we're going to talk to you about soon.
Yeah, I was also away. I was back in my home state of Vermont in the USA. I was over there for most of the second half of August. I followed Koshien High School baseball just a little bit. My wife's hometown team lost in their first game, so after that we kind of stopped watching. But yeah, I missed out on a lot of the Hanshin action, unfortunately, while I was back home getting some R&R. But we're back now. We're going to go do a quick recap of the games, try to talk about that a little bit, and just get back into the swing of things.
So here we go. Let's recap the past month since the last time we talked to you was July the 29th. Recap. All right, well, as we had mentioned on that show, the Road of Death was already underway. Actually, we were mid-game when we left off last time, I believe, and Hanshin, I think, ended up winning that game on July the 29th. Anyways, we got the 30th off, and then the 31st and August 1st, we were at Nagoya Dome for two games against the Dragons. How'd that go for us, Jakey?
Well, not well. It's the dreaded Nagoya Dome, where for some reason we always seem to do pretty poorly, and we did poorly again this time. So on the 31st, we had Iwasada going for us, and we lost that one 2-7, and then
Saiki was on the mound for the next game.
Yep, and then we send Saiki up, and we lose this one 5-8, so we get swept for the quick series in Nagoya Dome. Not a good way to continue on our road of death. We're dying pretty quickly here. Luckily, we've got a couple days off after that series before we head back to our home away from home, Kyocera Dome.
So, actually, yeah, this dropped us into sixth place, those two losses, which meant that we got to kind of dwell on that for two straight days. But as Jake said, we went to our home away from home where we play much better ball than we do at Koshien.
Yes, we did actually quite well. So we went up against the Swallows for the quick two-game series. And the first game we take 10-9, you know, maybe a bit of a nail-biter. Kuwahara got the win on this one. And then on the next day, we won a little more handily on the next day with Ono getting the win and then Dolis getting the save in a 3-1 victory to close out that week. So that kind of washed away the taste of the Nagoya Dome series a little bit. But unfortunately, we go next into a series against the Giants at Tokyo Dome.
But fortunately, we took 2 out of 3.
Yes, we did. We took 2 out of 3 in this one. With Iwasada getting the win on the first day and Kuwahara getting the win on the third day, the third game of those series. Dolis getting the save in both of those. The only loss we had was a 1-3 loss in the middle game, and that was Saiki getting tagged with a loss. But again, you know, it's only three runs. Didn't really pitch that poorly, so...
If I'm not mistaken, he gave up those runs early in the game. I think it might have been a quick home run or something like that, just as he had done in a couple of other of his starts. And at this point, Kanemoto was starting to get impatient with him. And I think it wasn't this game, but the next week's game where Kanemoto said, look, your next start is your last chance. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, so it's good, though, to take 2 out of 3 in Tokyo at the Dome. Mm-hmm. And we moved on then to Yokohama, where we are exceptionally good.
And that continued. And what another exceptionally good streak that continued is Randy Messenger, who, again, absolutely owns the Bay Stars, owns them in Yokohama, and that was no different this time. We go in for the first game of the series, win that one 3-1 with Messenger on the mound. Dolis gets the save. Again, just completely spanks these guys. And we continue into the next game. Ono is on the mound first in the next one, and we win that one 8-3. Unfortunately, the third game of the series, we have Baba going, and he did not perform. We got kind of trounced in this one. It was a 12-5 loss for us. So not the way we really wanted to end out the series, but hey, you know, anytime you can win a series and you win 2 in a row as well. In this case, we won the series against the Giants and the series against the Bay Stars. That gives you some momentum going forward, and we really needed it moving forward too.
A 4-2 week is nothing to complain about, especially all on the road, and especially heading into back to Kyocera Dome actually to face the Hiroshima Carp. Now, normally, Jake and I probably would have said, oh, the Tigers will lose all three or maybe win one. Well, they won 2 out of 3. So Kyuji actually picked up 2 wins in this, in spite of the fact that he actually gave up a run in each of those 2 games. And those were the Tuesday and Thursday games, which we won 7-4 and 3-2. And we lost the middle one.
4-6.
Sheesh, my eyes are terrible. Okay, yeah, 4-6. And Saiki got the loss. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, this is where Kanemoto said, dude, if you don't get it together in your next start, you're done. But we are most of the way through this road of death. I mean, just 9 games to go. And we're humming along quite nicely. Like, in the previous now, I guess, 11 games, the Tigers had only lost 3. They were 8-3 in their previous 11 games, which is pretty solid. And you'd think, then, going to Jingu, where the team is, you know, not too bad, and they actually hit the ball quite well, you know, hoping that things are going to go well, but a no guy. Akiyama takes the loss on Friday. Then we get the win from Ono on Saturday, with Dolis getting the save in a 4-3 win. And then we lose it out on Sunday, 8-5.
With Iwata on the mound, yeah.
Iwata.
For the first time in quite a while, I believe.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So we lose 2 out of 3 against the Swallows, unfortunately. And then we've got 1 week left on the road of death. And, man, it's looking good so far, but now it's not looking so good at all. Back to Nagoya Dome, 4-1 loss with Iwasada on the mound. And then Saiki redeems himself or saves himself or whatever with a 5-2 win. Dolis with the save. And then another loss, this one coming at the hands of Kyuji. It was a walk-off walk. Pardon me, a walk-off. It wasn't a walk-off walk. It was a walk-off loss. The first for the Tigers this year. They lost 4-3. So we lose 2 out of 3 at Nagoya Dome. And slowly, like, this momentum that was built in the first half of the month is starting to break down. And we go into Tokyo Dome, and it completely breaks down. Akiyama gets shellacked, followed by Ono also getting beat down. Pardon me, Akiyama didn't get shellacked. It was a 2-0 loss. Our batters got completely embarrassed. That was against Mercedes. And Kanemoto decided, hey, he's a left-handed pitcher, let's put all righties in the lineup. But if you look at Mercedes' stats, he's terrible against lefties and he's great against righties. Way to go, Kanemoto. So we got like 2 hits that game. One of them was by, surprise, a lefty. The other one was by a righty, but it was an infield hit. That was the only hit by a righty all day. So great strategizing there, Wacky. Then 6-0 the next day. That was when we were facing Sugano. We had a chance in the first inning, blew it, and that was it. Sugano clamped down for that. But a big dramatic win on Sunday. We were down 8-3 heading into the eighth inning. The Tigers were 0-50 this season when trailing after 7 innings, and it looked like an 0-51 was all but certain. Down 5 runs, but a huge rally in the top of the eighth gives us the 9-8 win to avoid the embarrassment of another sweep at the hand of the Giants. So that is the end of the road trip. And if I'm not mistaken, do the math real quick. I think we went 12 and 12 exactly on this road trip. So we broke even. Somewhat impressive.
Yeah, I don't think I called for a much worse record than that.
I think we said lucky if we go 10 and 14.
So hey, good on you, Tigers. I mean, you fizzled out toward the end, but did better than we expected. Not good enough, really, to give us a significant push to the playoffs. But hey, at this point, we'll take it with this team, I think.
Well, and the way the Central is playing out, I think going 12 and 12, and if they play 500 ball the rest of the way, they might make it in. But, you'd like to see them do a little bit better. So, welcome back to Koshien, guys. It's going to be great. You're back on your home turf. One-zero loss on day one. Iwasada with the hard luck. Well, he gave up a run in the first inning, and we never got it back. And then on Wednesday, Messenger gave up four runs in the second inning, and we never got them back. We lost that one 4-2. And then on Thursday, Psyche took the loss in a 1-3 heartbreaker. Actually, he gave up two runs. They were both unearned, so thanks a lot, fielders, for your hard work. Please come again. And the Tigers blew some great chances at runs, including bases loaded in, I want to say, the fifth inning. I don't remember. But Itohara hit a sack fly. Toritani trotted home. Umeno broke for third. The fielder, Aoki, threw it to third base. They tagged out Umeno before Toritani crossed home plate. No run scores. And that was when the score was 1-0, so that kept us with the goose eggs. And then at the end of the game, in the eighth inning, we had another bases loaded, one out opportunity. Itoi with a shallow fly and Navarro with a ground out. So two golden chances to put up a run, some runs. We got no runs out of those situations and only one run total. So swept at home in the welcome back. And thankfully, Jake, tonight, August 31st.
Yeah, we got rained out as we were losing. Akiyama had given up four runs through two-plus innings. And then in the top of the third, I believe it was, finally the rain came down, I guess, hard enough to call the game, which, I can think of a certain playoff game not too long ago where you kind of wish that had happened.
Yes.
But it didn't. That actually happened today. So we got rained out today, which might have been a mercy. We will see, what happens. But again, another rainout that we're going to have to make up. So all these games keep just getting tagged on to the end of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, that's for sure.
So that's where we stand right now. I don't want to, dwell on it too much, but that first series back at Koshien against the Swallows, just brutal to watch. They're two of those games at least should have been won. When your guy gets in there and you get a quality start from him, you get less than three runs given up. The bats just aren't getting it done. And in this case, those just kind of boneheaded, not errors, I guess they weren't. I don't think they were.
Well, there were, yeah.
Errors, but they're just huge boneheaded mistakes to make on the base paths. We should be winning these games, guys. You should be putting up more runs than this. You should be helping the pitchers out. But that's been sort of the theme this season, not putting up enough runs to win. Man, I was hoping to get psyched up to be back at Koshien, and I'm just, trying to feel the energy to pick up some tickets and go see them. But if this is the ball they're going to play, I think I'm going to be sitting at home on the couch catching the games instead of from the seats at Koshien.
Three runs in three games against a team that doesn't even have very good pitching. Okay, Ogawa had a good game against us in the first one, but their next two starters were by no means excellent pitchers. I mean, Yamanaka last night, it was his first win of the season. Hello, it's August 30th, and he's getting his first win in 10 starts. We were very bad against him during the WADA days, and I think maybe even in 2016. But last year, I felt like we figured him out, and even at the start of this year, we tagged him pretty bad. So, yeah, just heartrending. I come back from Canada, and the day that I came back, we won the game. It was not a pretty game, but we won it. And then after that, we lost 6 out of 7. So, what are you doing, guys? Like, welcome me back to Japan, please. Show some heart. Show some shunin.
Yeah, well, I came back. I think I was still on the plane as they were busy losing on the 30th. And sleeping on the plane is about the only place I really want to be in terms of that kind of baseball being played. So I luckily missed that one. But not a good way to start the homestand again here back at Koshien. And we'll hopefully, as they move forward in the series with DeNA, they'll be able to salvage something of this before we head down to Mazda Stadium to face the Carp.
Well, I'll tell you, they better do something on Sunday because T-Ray is going to be there with the CEO from Rock Core. It's part of the sponsorship through Kickstarter. This is his reward. He's going to hang out with me at a game, and we get to see the Blue Goat, Aoyagi, on the mound. So I'm pretty excited about that. At the very least, we get to see a pitcher that has not been seen by Top Squad fans all season. Anyhow, the month of August is now officially over, and if I'm not mistaken, the team went 11-13 on the month. So another losing month for our boys. We don't have a winning month yet. Our best effort was May, where we broke even. But other than that, we've had all losing months this season. It's pretty pathetic when you consider that September is notoriously our worst month, historically speaking. So look out, everybody. Strap in or conk out with some hard medicine or hard liquor.
Yeah, pretty much. That's about what you're going to need to watch this team. Well, you never know. You never know what they're going to pull together. They might finally find some of that shunin that we've been hearing about for so long but have yet to really see.
We saw it once in 51 tries.
Pretty much.
52, so. Actually, now. But getting back to the fact that it's August 31st, the month is over, and in 11 wins and 13 losses, there has to be some good players out there. And so we want to name for you our hitter of the month and our pitcher of the month. And so, for hitter, I would like to propose none other than he who I think got hurt at the end of July but kept playing anyways, Mr. Yoshio Itoi, who had a spectacular, splendid 29-for-75 with 3 home runs and 15 RBIs. Mr. Yoshio Itoi. Only one stolen base, but his legs are getting old. He is now 37 years old, so go, buddy, go. That's good stuff, actually.
Yeah, that brings his average up to, I believe, 314 now. So, in terms of the Tigers players, he's pretty much far and away the best. But I'm going to ahead and give it, not my player of the month, because I have to agree with Itoi, but as a runner-up, I've been wanting to say this for so long, because I never get a chance to say this. I'm going to give the runner-up to good old Umechan, who batted 338 on the month. He had 25 hits, 4 home runs.
Led the team.
Yeah, showing some power, showing some pop with 10 RBIs, and scored 12 runs, and he stole a base as well. So
he was also the bonehead that cost us the run on the Itohara sack fly. And that was August, but I'm going to still agree with you. Umeno really found himself this month. You look at his averages in the other months, and there's nothing remotely near this power, this average. And man, to have that guy in the 8th slot.
Yeah.
We should also throw in, he did have a squeeze play during the month of August, and he was successful at it. And so, good on him for that as well. But, seriously, the fact that he's hitting so well means that we don't have to call for that stupid squeeze play anymore. And when he did do it, it was actually a surprise. And that's when it works, Kanemoto, not when everybody knows it's coming.
Yeah, this is the kind of performance we really need. Yeah, you look at the other months, 137 in April, 213 in May. Brought it up a bit in June for 286, but then back down to 222 for July. So, finally we get something good out of him, and it's like, we feel like we've been waiting for this for so long. And hopefully he'll keep up the pace. I don't know if I'm going to trust him to do this consistently yet. He's got to win my trust a little bit more consistently now. But, we'll give it to him for now because we like what we see. Keep it up, buddy. We need you to play like this. Go, Umeno.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. His average is up to 250. And if he can hit 250 the rest of the way, never mind. He's not going to hit 338. And he's not going to hit 4 home runs in a month every month. But, this is the guy that we saw in 2014, at least in terms of power. He hit 7 home runs in his rookie year, and now he's got a career high 8. He has a chance at double digits, which doesn't sound too impressive, but if he's found his bat, he's found his swing, next year, who knows, he might be able to hit 15 home runs, and 15 home runs from a Hanshin Tiger, I'll take it, man.
I'll take it. I was just going to say.
Especially from our catcher, bro, named Haraguchi.
Just getting 250 from your catcher, 250 from your number 8 man, it means it's not an automatic out anymore.
Yeah.
That's what we've had for so long. So, yes. Keep it up, man. I'm really hoping we're seeing finally the resurgence of the emergence of Umeno.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Fingers crossed.
Okay, pitcher of the month. You know, honestly, everybody, I think August is the month where pitchers tend to get really tired, especially starting pitchers, and runs just pile up. And you see it league-wide. It's not just the Tigers thing. A lot of pitchers are getting rocked like never before. And a prime example for us would be Randy Messenger, who did not have a good month. I wish he had, but it really wasn't a very good month for him. Hopefully he'll bounce back in September. But we're not naming a starter as our pitcher of the month. But I don't think we have for a while either. I mean, we've had like QG in there and other guys too.
Yeah.
So who do we got?
Dolis. It's got to be Dolis.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at his stats for August. He's with a straight up one ERA. He's got eight saves, you know, and there haven't been that many opportunities for saves either. So basically, he's getting it done when he needs to get
done. I'm pretty
sure
he's a perfect 8 for 8 in saves. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's not really anybody else we can look at. QG2 had a couple of rough spots. So, yeah, I think it's got to be Dolis. So there's no starters I can name. So good on you, Dolis. You're getting your job done. I wish there were more opportunities for saves, but hey.
Interestingly, though, somebody else did get a save this month.
Yeah, who was that?
What happened was Dolis came into a game, and he drilled a guy in the head with his first pitch. I think he drilled Aoki, and it didn't hit him in the head. If I'm not mistaken, that was the... Oh, no, that was the Iwata one. Never mind. Dolis actually legit drilled someone in the head. Iwata allegedly grazed Aoki's helmet and got tossed. But anyways, Dolis did drill someone in the head. So as an emergency, number 14, Atsushi Nomi came in and picked up a save.
Yeah.
But Nomi actually had a pretty good month as well, so props to him. Anyways, our relievers, you know, some of them are getting tagged kind of worse than they have in past months or years, but others are holding strong, so it's good to see that for sure.
Yep. Punching Tigers English League. Punching Tigers English League. Punching Tigers English League. Punching Tigers
English League. Hot topics. Hot topics. All right. So, for the hot topic, Jake, you said in the intro that we would tell people a little bit later why we're sitting in a karaoke box side by side doing a podcast again, because I thought it was a one-time only, and I thought that the next time that we talked, you'd be in Kyoto and I'd be in Asia, and we'd just be chatting through Skype or whatever.
Yeah, no, it just worked out really well. We got invited by the Amagasaki International Association. I'm not sure if I'm getting the name exactly right.
You are.
To go and give a talk on the Tigers on a few different themes. It was mostly T-Ray doing the talking on the first theme was, you know, what is the appeal of Hanshin Tigers to foreigners living in Japan? And after that, we both got together to talk about what the Tigers need to do to finally win another pennant. And it was a good talk. You know, there were a lot of pretty serious fans and older fans there too, which is cool because they know a lot more about the history of the team and stuff like that. I personally, because I obviously don't have nearly the knowledge that T-Ray does, I felt a little bit on the spot there. I was just waiting for somebody to just start yelling at me about something. But actually, T-Ray was the one who got the old Yaji.
He got scolded
by one guy.
Yeah.
But it was a really good time, actually. I had a really fun time talking. You know, it's always fun to go and talk in front of people who share that same passion for the Tigers.
Yeah, but we did it in Japanese, you guys. So that was kind of a bit of a twist on what we usually do in front of a mic for all of you. But yeah, it was really fun. You know, one of our followers on Facebook, he sent out the invite to us because he is one of the heads of that association. And we just kind of planned this a little bit on our vacations, but mostly kind of rushed through it when we got back from our vacations.
Yeah.
And, you know, it went surprisingly well. Like, it's kind of interesting. We talk Tigers with all of you all the time in English. So that part of it wasn't a problem. I was just worried, like, would our Japanese hold up? Mm. And, man, I mean, Jake's Japanese is stellar, so that wasn't a problem at all. And somehow I managed to get through it as well. I mean, like, my first presentation was, as Jake said, it was just me. So I didn't really have anybody to bounce stuff off of. If I needed to take a break, I just had to kind of like pause for a bit and that was it. But there was nobody to just kind of hand the mic to and actually, you know, recollect my thoughts. But anyway, so what I talked about, we'll just go through it real quick for y'all, is I talked about what makes Hanshin Tigers such a fun team to cheer for or whatever. Keeping in mind that we're not just talking about 2018. And, so I talked about three aspects. One, the fans, whom I said are just a lot of fun with the cheering, the post-game cheering. I also said they're fun because they like foreign fans. You know, like they'll come up to you and try to talk to you in English, and they'll give you, like if you need a balloon for the balloon launch, they'll give you one if they have one. They might buy you a drink, stuff like that. They like to take pictures with us. Which I just think is kind of fun. Like, I feel like a little celebrity, even though they're not doing it because of H10. And then I also talked about the fact that the fans know their team, love their team, and sometimes they show it through their jeering, through their yaji. And so that was basically what I said. That, and also the team travels well. The fans travel well, I should say. So that makes the fans great. Then I talked about the stadium. Koshien Stadium, all of you know, is such a historic place. A beautiful building, beautiful ballpark, great view. You can just feel history when you're there, and there's just a special something about going to that stadium. I mean, it's different than going to any other stadium, I feel, in Japan.
Yeah.
And maybe even in the world. Like, there's some stadiums back in America that you would kind of equate it to, like Wrigley or Fenway or stuff like that,
yeah.
But there's not a lot of stadiums left out there that have that kind of old magic to them.
Man, I feel it's like that every time I walk into Koshien, it's the same feeling when you step up the little walkway and you enter the field, it just washes over you, man. It's like,
yeah.
And I get that same feeling at Fenway Park too, and it's like something you just don't get anywhere else. You know, I love going to see games at the Dome and stuff too, but just not the same. Yeah, Koshien is special. That
yeah,
way, so.
sure, absolutely. And then the third thing that I talked about was history. And, you know, the history of this team is a fabulous one, and if you don't know much about it, man, do yourselves a favor, go to H10, look up the history part of the page, the team history part. I put a lot of work into that in 2016, 2017. There's a lot of stuff that you can read about. Championships, great players, incredible, interesting events, things that happened to the team. All-time, you know, record holders / stat leaders. Guys that have gone off to MLB or come back to the Tigers after MLB. All sorts of stuff. I'm not going to waste a lot of your time talking about it now, because if you're interested, you can read it at your own pace and to your own depth. But this team has an outstanding and very fun, interesting history.
Hmm.
So that was it. That was my talk. And then I actually finished it up by giving some of the quotes that some of you all shared with us on Facebook and on Twitter about why you cheer for the Hanshin Tigers. And so thank you so much for the responses. I think I probably got like about 30 responses total. And I used, I think, the top four, that in my estimation anyways. But really interesting stuff. It was great. So I had fun doing my presentation. I was a bit nervous, and I was worried I went overtime, but it was good. It's fine. And then we moved into the T-Ray and Jake, how can the Tigers win? And as I prefaced there, everybody talks about this, even the most knowledgeable baseball people. And of course, the Hanshin front office or managers or coaches or, you know, like everybody and their dog wants Hanshin to win. And they talk about it, and they think about it nonstop. So we are not going to have the best answers or answers that nobody's ever thought of before.
There's a few things that stand out, I think, and then there's a few things that, you know, probably go on in the background a little bit more, that are interrelated, and it's just hard to really, you know, pick all those out. Today's presentation, the first thing we were asked to talk about in today's presentation was why the Tigers can't beat the Carp. And the second one was why they can't beat the Giants.
So, just to cut in a little bit, there was the guy that invited us, Furukawa-san, he was kind of the moderator, so he kind of introduced each topic at least a little bit and kind of gave us a little bit of a breather. And so, yeah, we talked about why we can't beat the Carp. One of my suggestions or ideas, and it's not necessarily like pinning the blame on the fans, but the attitude of the Carp fans versus the attitude of the Hanshin fans, like when the Carp do poorly or when they're losing, man, you still feel like the team is winning or is going to win. Whereas with the Tigers, like, even though I hear at every game, like before every inning, the Oan Dan, you know, they're saying, Zettai Katsuzo Taigasu, but people don't believe that in their hearts, man.
No.
And when they're losing or when there's an error or when a run scores or when a home run is hit against them, the fans are just like, ah, mataka, like, oh, not again. And you know, it's just deflating. And then on top of that, as we said, yaji, right? Like the jeering, which I don't know if it happens at Carp games. I've only been to one Carp game in Hiroshima, but I feel like Hanshin has the patent on that. They are, well, the fans anyways. And so I think that makes a difference. I mean, the players hear it, and you hear players all the time. I mean, Ando talked about it when he retired. Fujinami talked about it when he was interviewed in Sendai. He said, like, oh, the fans are very kind here, so it's easy to pitch here. Umeno, in his Hiro interview, I think it was the last one at Koshien before the team left on the road, said, hey, guys, keep cheering for Shintaro, you know, or Fujinami. You know, if you keep encouraging him and are kind to him, I'm sure he's going to be even better than before. So, I mean, obviously the players themselves are, they're kind of prompting this, like, hey, man, enough is enough.
maybe they're not saying like cut it out completely, but they are saying, hey, let's put a clamp on it at least a little bit, you know, rein it in a little bit.
And you know, I mean, the guys hear all this stuff. You know, you can actually, if you go on YouTube, you can find scenes of pro baseball players actually getting into it with guys who are, you know, doing some jeering and stuff like that. So they all hear this stuff, and you know, it has to affect them in different ways. Especially if you're somebody like Fujinami, who clearly has a pretty thin skin, and that's not a knock against him, that's just his personality, but, you know, it's going to affect you, so I definitely agree with that, and the Olandon stuff, and just the fans in general, they're just relentless. They just push on and keep going, and always it's always been really impressive to me, you know, when I go and see
props
them.
Props to them, yeah, for that, anyways, for that part.
At Koshien and at Kyosato Dome are the only places I've seen them play the Tigers, and it just, yeah, they just keep going and keep going, so.
But obviously, you know, it's the product on the field that wins or loses games, so of course we're not pinning it solely on the fans, and obviously, you know, like, anybody can look at the numbers and see that the Carps steal more bases, they hit more home runs, they hit for better power, they've got better defense, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, it's the offensive side of things that is, you know, doing it. I personally think, and we didn't talk about this tonight at the show or at the presentation, but I bet if you looked up how many come from behind wins each team has, I mean, the Carp did it tonight again. They were down, I think, 4-1 or 5-1, and they came back to tie at 5-5. And I don't know if they won tonight or not, but the fact that they came back that, you know, that well, they are a team of comebacks, and we are not, at least this year, but even in years past. So that's pretty much about it for the Carp, right? Then we moved into the Giants, and, you know, obviously the answer is so obvious. I mean, Yoshinobu Takahashi is the manager. No, never mind. It's not him. It's definitely not him. So we talked about this almost in a more traditional way. Like, the Tigers have not defeated the Giants in a season series since 2007. That's 11 years of embarrassment. And we really feel like this is almost more of a front office thing, or a, like, fans slash front office slash even players expectation attitude.
Yeah.
Like, the Giants are confident. The Giants are expecting to win every time they play, and every year they're expecting to, if not win the championship, at least be in contention for it.
Yeah, and they're expecting to beat the Tigers.
Yes.
which is the main thing too there, you know. So yeah, it was hard to sort of pin one particular thing down for that particular topic, you know, because nothing really jumps out right away. But yeah, it just seems like there is this constant expectation from all corners that the Giants are going to win. And so even when they're not actually winning the championship, though, they're still playing really well. When it comes to the Tigers, it's the same thing. The Tigers, on the other hand, they just don't... You don't have that expectation. It's almost like this expectation that they're not going to win properly, yep. You know, or win, do really well, especially lately. So it's just more of a matter of the intangibles, I guess you'd say, with these two teams. Hard depending on one thing, but and this season too, it looks like it's going to be the same thing.
I mean, history has dictated that the Tigers come in second to the Giants, and it's happened time and time again in the standings. There's been so many stories of the Tigers missing the championship, the pennant, by just a game or two, right at the very end of the season, losing to the Giants in very key games, all that kind of stuff. So the Giants have never gone more than 4 years without a pennant. Can you believe that? I mean, the Tigers, if they get one pennant every 5 years, I think Kansai would be absolutely, like, hysterically happy.
It'd be a different place to live in, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking one every 5 years here. You know, like, we got two in the 60s, you know, two in 3 years, and then two in the 2000s, early 2000s, in 3 years. And then between that, between 1965 and 2002, we had one in, like, 37 years. So, I mean, that's the type of team that we are historically. But one of the things me and Jake talked about, which I thought was kind of interesting, is how this kind of parallels the Red Sox and Yankees in a way, and how the Red Sox always played second fiddle to the Yankees, and there was always that expectation, like, yeah, the Yankees are going to win, the Yankees are winners, the Red Sox are losers, and there was the curse on the Sox and all that stuff. And then 2004 happened. I'm going to let the Sox fan take it over from here.
Yeah, well, it's like there's the Yankees dynasty, you know. It just, they went so long, you know, just winning constantly, and the Red Sox were always just getting pushed around by them. And then finally, you know, in 2004, most baseball fans, I think, know about this. You know, the Red Sox played the Yankees in the playoffs and lost three games, and then came back amazingly to win the next four, which had never been done before, and went right on after that to win the World Series. And since then, it's been great to be a Red Sox fan. You know, it was terrible for 80-plus years to be a Red Sox fan up until then, but then they finally came back and started winning. And so you wonder, could the Tigers do the same thing? You know, could they finally come through and just break up this Giants dynasty, so to speak? And would that sort of be the trigger that they need to move on and start winning? I don't know if that's, you know, what needs to happen. I don't think it's going to happen for a little while, but it couldn't hurt, obviously.
No.
But until something like that, something big changes, it's hard to say if they're going to be able to make any headway against the Giants at this rate.
So as I said in the presentation, in 2014, the Tigers looked like they might be on the verge of doing something similar to what the Red Sox did. I mean, they went into Tokyo in the playoffs, having to win 4 out of 6 in Tokyo Dome, and they won 4 straight. I mean, they absolutely humiliated the Giants, and none of the games were really super close. I think the Giants had 1 lead in all those 4 games, maybe. Maybe none. I forget, but it was like complete domination by the Tigers. That was a good team, by the way. But I thought that might be it. I mean, the Tigers finally vanquished their foes in their barn in the playoffs when it matters. And they even won the first game of the Japan Series that year against the Hawks, and it really looked like they were unstoppable, but then they lost 4 straight. They're put in their place, the end. And the Tigers have not been the same against the Giants ever since either, losing in the 2015 playoffs to them and then just losing every season to them for the last several. So that was topic number 2. Topic number 3 and 4 were kind of interrelated, but 3 was how come our foreign hitters just can't get it done? And this is one that, you know, it kind of hits close to home. Not that either of us is a foreign hitter, but we certainly kind of have that special place in our hearts for them. And we really wish that the team would find the right guys, first of all, like when they're looking, and then secondly, treat them properly, play them properly, use them properly when they do get here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before on this podcast, you know, the debacle that was Campbell and then especially Jason Rogers. And now this year with Rosario, you know, with Campbell and Rogers was getting the wrong guys, first of all. I mean, again, not a knock on them, and then not using them properly. And this year, too, with Rosario, you're not figuring out how to use him properly as well. It's a serious problem, you know, and other teams don't seem to have the same problem to the extent that the Tigers have, at least recently. So, yeah, it's something that really needs to change.
So one of my suggestions was, when I look back at the past 18 years of Hanshin Tigers foreign hitters, I see two guys that Hanshin picked out straight out of America that have done well. Two in 18 years. Matt Merton, Mauro Gomez. That's it. The other three guys in the 21st century that I would say have done well for the Tigers were George Arias, who came from Oryx over to us, and then also Andy Sheets, who came to us from Hiroshima, and Craig Berzel, kind of arguably good. He had one really good year, and then one mediocre year, and then one bad year, but he also came to us from the Cebu Lions. So these three guys had already had experience in Japan, got some of the rust, you know, shaken off with other teams, and then came over to us. So I was saying, why don't we look at what other teams have got and try and pluck someone from them, because it seems like that works better for us than pulling guys out of America. So I don't know, maybe Ernesto Mejia from the Cebu Lions, or I'm not really sure who else is out there and available or stealable. I'd love to get like a Brandon Laird, but I don't think he's going to be leaving Hokkaido anytime soon. Or Zealous Wheeler. I was also thinking when Jafet Amador got suspended for drug use, you know, and he claims that it was innocent, or that it was like, you know, he wasn't actually using performance-enhancing drugs. It was just something that was in medication he was taking, whatever. I was thinking, man, this is our chance. If he either retires from baseball or just the Eagles cut him loose, we got to pick him up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, those are just ideas that we had. And which, again, we're just throwing out ideas.
Well, the other problem is that we've talked about before, too, is that they're relying too much on the foreign players in a lot of ways. Which
yes.
Brings us to the next topic, which was why can't they raise up their younger players properly?
So here's the thing. Yeah, like if the young players started to develop and if the Tigers had a good core of players around the foreigner that they bring in, there's way less pressure on them. He relaxes a little bit more. They can be more patient with him, or they can fiddle with him in the lineup. Or even if he doesn't perform well for 4 straight games, the rest of the team picks up the slack. They still win 2 or 3 of them. But now they're saying, hey, without this foreigner, without Rosario hitting 30 home runs for us, we have no chance.
And if that's the expectation you go into the season with, well, if he doesn't perform, guess how you're going to feel? You're just not going to start winning. So, yeah, so then the guy gets blamed a lot, and it becomes his fault, which is just kind of crazy, too. But, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, again, on other podcasts as well.
Coaches.
It seems to be an organization-wide thing. There's something wrong when, A, you know, your guys do really well in Nigun and consistently just hit a wall when they come to Ichigun.
Or they do really well for 1 year up at Ichigun, and then they're never the same.
And the other problem is that it happens for everyone. Look at all the young players. None of them are performing to the level that they should be. There's something going on organization-wide, and the organization needs to fix it. Whatever it is, again, I'm not going to go on banging about firing Kanemoto here or anything, but something's got to happen because what's happening now is just not going to get done.
So we listed up a bunch of guys that are, you know, have performed well or have the potential or the expectations that have not been able to do it consistently enough to be regular players. And our list included Hayata, Takayama, Oyama, Hojo, Haraguchi, Nakatani, and Egoshi. As guys that we think have the potential to be excellent, but are nowhere near that right now. And of course, part of the blame is on them. I mean, it's their talent, it's their ability to hit or field or whatever it is. You know, in the case of Hayata, it's his fielding that's preventing it mostly. But yeah, so we really think that it's got to be like a coaching issue or something like that. And so, but then another one I thought was maybe the media. Maybe even the fans, like I said, maybe too much jeering. It's affecting the young, fragile, you know, egos, especially kids that are not born and raised in Osaka, where, you know, tsukkomi, right? Like basically, like, pointing out people's weaknesses or picking on people's, you know, shortcomings or dumb things they say is part of the culture. If you're not from that culture, it's got to be a little bit, like, intimidating, and it's got to throw you off, even if you're a pro player, even if you're supposed to be thick-skinned, right? So that brings us to guess who gets picked on more than anybody else from the fans. The guy with the most expectation on him as well.
Yeah, Mr. Shintaro Fujinami. And we've talked about this again on the podcast as well. You know, the topic we were given is how can Fujinami bounce back? And, you know, honestly, it's really hard to say if he actually can bounce back with the Tigers, at least under the current management. At least that's my opinion. I think it's going to either take a management and coaching change because he's been kind of almost abused in some ways, you know,
in a lot of ways.
How many times he's been sent back and forth between Naruohama, you know, the 161 pitch game that Kanemoto made him throw. So there's that, and it might just be he can't function properly in Kansai. It might be too much for him. You know, he is a really thin-skinned kind of guy. You can tell, and he's even said it himself. He prefers pitching in other places sometimes.
Because he said it on TV even for a whole national audience.
So there you go. It might just be a matter of that. I don't want to see him traded.
No, me neither.
Rather, I think he's got the potential to be a really good pitcher. I'd rather see coaching changes, and hopefully that will lead to his resurgence. But it's anyone's guess at this point how it's going to play out.
Okay, so anybody that says, "Oh, Fujinami is not that good to begin with," or whatever, or you know, like he's junk. I have heard, well, I read that Enatsu, who is, you know, a legendary pitcher with the Tigers, arguably the best pitcher in the team's history, has said that actually Fujinami has better stuff than Ohtani.
Yeah.
That was the general consensus when they were drafted as well. And besides that, dare I put on record, Scott Matheson also said that Fujinami has got so much talent and it's being wasted or it's not being used right. And I feel really bad for Fujinami, he said. Forgive me if I shouldn't have said that, but those are the facts. And so, yeah, that's basically what we talked about. And then finally, we gave like our final recommendation. And both of us kind of said, get rid of the manager, bring in somebody from the outside, bring in a new coaching staff. We need to revamp people.
Yeah, and I think that this season is already showing that very much.
Yes.
Because our team should have the talent to be a much better place than they are right now. And they're
should
not,
be competing.
Yeah, and they're not. And, you know, you have to start looking at organizational problems for that kind of thing when it's everybody who's having problems. So, yeah, that's about where I stand on that in terms of improving the team. Hopefully, hey, maybe they'll prove us wrong for the last month of baseball.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. So, that was our presentation. It was great times. And, you know, thank you to Furukawa-san for inviting us. And, you know, there was even somebody else there that said, hey, we're going to be having an event in Nishinomiya. Would you guys come and talk at that as well? And a lot of people came up and thanked us, and they said it was really good, entertaining. So, man, that to me was just mind-blowing because I didn't know that I could do that for a Japanese audience, especially people that have known the Tigers, you know. Tigers are their flesh and blood, and they've known them for decades, and I've been a fan for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty cool stuff. Anyways, you know what, guys? to be straight up with you, the karaoke box is telling us when the episode ends, because we rented this room for X amount of time, and our time is almost up, so we're going to cut even the ending short. Thank you so much for listening to H10. This has been episode 85, and we're hoping to push out maybe 3 more episodes this season, maybe a little bit more. We'll see, but Jake, it's good times. I don't know. If we get to do another karaoke box, let's do it, but if not, then I'll see you on Skype.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully it will be in a better situation than the last few games that we've been seeing. But yeah, everybody keep cheering for the Tigers. Who knows? They might make that a miraculous push that will get them into the postseason. I'm going to keep cheering, probably from my living room, probably not from Koshan as much. But yeah, go Tigers.
Hey, the thing is, like we said in the presentation too, we do this all because we love the Tigers. Even all the bashing that we do, it's out of love. So let's go. Let's keep on loving these Tigers. We'll see you next time, everyone. Hanshin Tigers, it's your ball. Come on, you know there is your ball.